So before every Yontif, I tell my kids or ask my kids, what do they think the most popular Shaila of the Zman is? So this Shaila tonight I want to discuss is probably the second most popular Shaila I've been asked over the past few weeks. The number one Shaila has been Tfilas Kalim. That's been a big discussion. We went through that already in the past. Number two Shaila is the following. Are you allowed to buy a surplus in Chametz before Pesach, knowing quite well that you plan to sell it to the Goy? Or is it simply that whatever you have left over, that's what you could sell? But to go out and buy more Chametz and more noodles and more bread and more whatever, to just in order to sell it to the Goy, is that something that's permitted or not? So I want to talk about, in general, Mechiras Chametz. How does Mechiras Chametz work? And then we'll get back to this particular question. So Mechiras Chametz is a very clear halacha in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says that a person, a Jew, must either get rid of their Chametz, or they could sell it to a Goy, or give it to a Goy. And the Mishnah Berurah spends a lot of time discussing how does one hand over Chametz to a Goy. And he goes through every single possible acquisition, every single possible kinyan. Giving money, giving a shtar, you know, shaking hands, renting out a place, everything under the sun he goes through one by one. You could even send through a shliach. You could send it, you know, nowadays, on email. He doesn't talk about email, obviously, but you don't have to actually hand it to the guy. You could have the rabbi be your agent. Everything possibly goes through, again, pages and pages talking about how to do it properly, because this is a real kinyan. It's a real, true acquisition. Do you do a kinyan sudar, kinyan chalipin, kinyan chatzar, everything possible. Whatever it is, he says, in the end of the day, it must be done kedas kedin. According to the proper halacha, everything must be done properly. And he says, whatever is common amongst regular buyers and sellers, regular merchants, if that is acceptable, like shaking hands, that will be just as acceptable for selling your chametz to a goy. So when Rav Weinberger sells his chametz to Israel in the shul, he does everything. He gives him money, and Israel pays money for it, and there's a document, and then they shake hands. Everything possible, it's all covered to make sure this is a good kinyan, it's a good acquisition. So that being said, what can you sell? So Pasha Pshat of the Mechaber is, you could sell anything. You could sell whiskey, you could sell bread, you could sell challah, you could sell whatever you want. It's a good sale. Because it's a true sale. I don't own it anymore. It might be my possession, but I don't own it anymore, and therefore it's fine. The Mishnah Berurah points out that you have to point out to the goy that there's a key, that you're available, how to get inside, because it really is a true kinyan. Back in Staten Island, Rabbi Marcus, I'm sure they still do this, every year, Rabbi Marcus, who used to be the Rav in Staten Island, would make sure that the custodian would go into one of the Jewish family's homes and raid the kitchen, raid the cabinet, to make sure it was real. And you can't stop him, because you really sold it. This is a very nice way to show how true it was. It's not necessary, but certainly it highlighted how good a kinyan it is. So being it's a good kinyan, so feel free to buy whatever you want and sell it, because it's a good sale. So there is no problem unless you have the following minhag. There is a minhag brought down by the Chazon Ish, and Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Shecht and the Talmidim have such a practice, which is as follows. Since in reality, you know, if we were to tell, explain to the non-Jew what's going on, they'd say the whole thing's a loophole, the whole thing's a joke, that the chametz is in my cabinet and I sell it, it's a big joke. I remember when, the Muslims, part of their religion, they don't lend on interest. They don't do ribis either. It's part of their Quran. Now, when someone once presented to them this concept of heter iskas that we have, they thought the whole thing was a joke. The whole thing was a loophole. Now, someone in the past few years figured out in the Lumdis how for the Muslims they could actually lend not through interest as a big chacham, so how to get around it. But if someone saw this, it's a big loophole. The chametz is in my house and I could sell it? So since it's some of it a loophole, which the Gemara calls ha'arama. Ha'arama means a loophole, it's some type of trickery. The Chazon Ish felt, and Rav Shecht and Rav Soloveitchik felt, that you really shouldn't sell what's called chametz gamur. Chametz gamur is real, pure chametz. Bread, pretzels, pasta, everything that's pure chametz. If it's already part of a mixture, without getting into the details now, you could go on OU, Star K, CRC, they give you a whole long list of what's chametz gamur and what's not chametz gamur. So they had the practice not to sell chametz gamur. But the Chazon Ish was very careful, don't publicize this. Because if you publicize that you can't sell chametz gamur, everyone's going to think the whole sale is a joke in the first place. The sale works. But some yechidim want to be machmir not to sell real chametz, and they get rid of all the chametz gamur before Pesach. So what about this year? This year, if you're makbid not to sell chametz gamur, which means you want to get rid of all your bread, all of your cookies, all your cakes, get rid of it, and only sell that which is a mixture, can you change your practice this year? Can it be different this year that you're scared what's going to be after Pesach's over? What's it going to be like in the Gourmet Glatt season's Kol Seiv? Is there going to be bread for me? Will there be food? Is there going to be a shortage? So people are very nervous this year. They're not going to have enough food. Or maybe the lines are going to be too long. The 6 feet social distancing, it's going to be too long to get the food. Is that a reason not to follow that minhag? So just to be clear again. If your minhag is to sell chametz gamur every year, you sell bread and pasta, no question. Buy all you want, sell all you want. The question becomes those who don't sell chametz gamur, can this year be an exception? And then to change their minhag for this year to keep the bread in the house and sell it. Is that enough of a reason? So I'm going to compound this question with the following. I got a couple other shadows this year that are related. Someone asked me the question, it was actually on the chat. If you normally are makpid not to have machine matzah, you only use shmur matzah, hand matzah, can you change this year to have dafka machine matzah? Why would you want to change? Because everyone with the, you know, handmade, they're using the hands, and the hands are dirty, and the COVID-19 going around, I don't want it in my house, so machine is much cleaner. Are you allowed to change your minhag for this particular year? So Rav Asher Weiss, I was on a call with him, and a few other rabbanim last week, 2 weeks ago, and he said, anybody who has such a shaila doesn't know how the machine business works, rather the matzah business. Because matzah that we buy was made months ago, before COVID-19 even hit America. So that's already been safeguarded in matzah boxes. But let's say a person has a good concern. Even if it's a good concern that it's going to be, you know, the machine-made is safer from the handmade matzah. Can he change his minhag? Every year he only had a handmade matzah. But this year he wants to change it to machine-made. Does he have to do a taras adar? So the same question. So the answer is as follows. There is a din in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Nedarim, Simin Reish Yudal. And the halacha is talking about a guy who had the practice of fasting every single year between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. During Aseres Mei Tshuva, had a practice to fast. And 1 year, he became ill. He was too weak and he couldn't fast. Does he have to do a Taras Adarim to undo what he had been doing the past, I don't know, 20 years fasting? Does he have to do a Taras Adarim? And the Mechaber says, you need to get 3 people, and you need to do a Taras Adarim, because every single year you were fasting, and now you want to stop the minhag, you need a Taras Adarim. But the Shach there on the side says, how come the Shulchan Aruch says in Or Chaim, in a different halacha, Simen Tav Kuf Samaches Sibbeis, that if a guy's fasting, and during the 10 days of Seres Mei Tshuva, and he happens to be invited to a bris, does he have to do a Taras Adarim to eat at that bris? And the Shulchan Aruch there says, no, for a bris, you don't need a Taras Adarim. You could go ahead and enjoy the Suda. So how come in Hilchos Nedarim, when the guy is too weak, he needs a Taras Adarim, but when it comes to Bris Milah, he doesn't need a Taras Adarim, he can just go eat. So Shach gives an answer, I'll leave that aside for now, those who want could look it up. But what the Dagam Ravava says, Dagam Ravava is the Nod Behuda. The Nod Behuda on the side of the page, his parish is called Dagam Ravava, explains as follows. Now, Nias Daiti, it appears, says the Nod Buddha, the Gave Bris Milah Eino Chozer Mi Minag Lagamre. The question becomes, I'll say this outside first, then I'll read it inside. If the guy is undoing his minhag entirely, that he wants to stop it from this point on forever, then he needs a Taras Adarim. When it comes to a circumstance, an extreme circumstance, where it's a one-time, like, free pass, then it doesn't require a Taras Adarim, because the next year, you'll continue the minhag. So what he says here is, by Bris Milah, it's just a one-time occurrence. Just this day, he's not going to fast because of the Bris Milah. But the rest of Aseres Mei Tshuva, the next year and the year after, he's going to continue the minhag. When it came to the halacha nedarim, where the guy was too weak, the Nod Behuda says it's a case where the guy is too weak to ever fast again. He's too old. He's not going to ever change. He wants to entirely uproot the minhag. Then, to be okay minhag, you need a Taras Adarim. So back to our cases now. whenever it comes to a minhag, not a halacha, but a minhag, that a family or a whatever the minhag where it came from, if you want to undo it for one time dispensation, just a one time event because of extreme circumstances, you do not need a taharas nedarim. So plugging it back into our two shalas, the guy who wants to have only machine made this year, he does not need a taharas nedarim. He's able to go ahead and buy machine made because this is a one time event. Next year, he's going to go back to his old minhag of having handmade. And so too for our case. Even though, let's say in general, you're machmir not to sell chametz gamar. You get rid of all the bread and the pasta and the bread, the cake and the cookies. But this year, because you're scared that they're not going to have any more food in the gourmet glatter seasons, so this year, you can make an exception and not keep your minhag and sell chametz gamar. Now, regarding practically, I can't give you any advice economically. I can't promise there'll be food afterwards. But when Rav Asher Weiss addressed this question last week, he said, I find it very hard to imagine that there won't be any food the week after Pesach. The way the world, Baruch Hashem, runs in such a way, there's such a surplus. He doesn't think there's strong enough grounds to break such a minhag. But that being said, if a person really has anxiety, so they feel that this year they want to break it, they're allowed to break the minhag and they could go ahead and sell chametz gamar this particular year as long as they go back next year to stop selling chametz gamar. Okay, everyone, have a good night. And I guess tomorrow night we don't have, but Sunday night we'll continue on a different topic.